You're listening to The 21st. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Usually, the spring months are an extremely busy time for sports at all levels. In past years, near the end of March, fans could turn on their TVs and see the NCAA tournament, NBA, and NFL games, the beginning of the baseball season, even the Masters tournament for golf. That's not to mention the tens of millions of children nationwide who play sports at the local level this time of year. This year, the spread of the coronavirus, stay-at-home orders, and social distancing guidelines have changed the course of the season. For many, a spring without sports, professional or otherwise, has left a gaping hole. And as uncertainty around the coronavirus and its implications continue, many are starting to wonder what effect this forced hiatus might have on athletics in the long term. Earlier this morning, WILL managing editor and resident Cubs fan Brian Moline spoke with a few different sports aficionados about what the past few weeks have been like for them. Cheryl Ray Stout covers everything Chicago sports for WBEZ. Will Leach also joined them. He is a national correspondent for MLB.com.
Cheryl, let's start with you. You've been covering sports in Chicago for more than three decades, and I'd imagine it was a pretty surreal feeling for you when you first heard that the NBA season would be suspended, then the start of the Major League Baseball season delayed. That was supposed to begin today. Can you walk us through some of what was going through your mind earlier this month when all this started happening?
Well, I was at the Blackhawks game, and as we're watching the game, Brandon Saad scores a goal, and then we hear about what was going on with the NBA and that you had a player that tested positive, and it wasn't long after that where they were shutting down the league that night. And then the next day, it took the NHL some time to get their situation. They shut down, and it was a slow moving, but it became a tsunami because I think the NBA set the tone. They knew that they had to do something fast, and they did. And then the NHL, soccer, and of course, baseball. So it was a shock, but at least they did it. They didn't sit and wait any longer than they had to.
Sure. And Will, I'm curious what it felt like for you as things that that I know that you love, like the NCAA men's basketball tournament, the start of the Major League Baseball season. What was it like for you watching those things fall by the wayside?
Yeah, in many ways, I'd written a piece about this for New York Magazine earlier in the week. I know it seems like they did this early. In many ways, they were probably a little bit late. I think that, there were people at spring training games on the Thursday, the day after Rudy Gobert had tested positive, and after Tom Hanks and Trump's disorienting address, I would say. I think that there were still games that day. There were still people gathering that day. In a lot of ways, I think some people think it even almost went a little bit too slow. A lot of this really does come down to the competitive timelines in these sports. Like, the college basketball, there was no way they were ever going to be able to put that tournament together, considering the uncertainty. But look at something like the NFL. The NFL right now is still acting like everything is normal and everything is fine and they're on their general schedule. Now, while that's been helpful for some of us that work in the world of sports, the Tom Brady to the Buccaneers basically was like a sports talk stimulus package for the kind of conversation. But they may be living a little bit of an illusion themselves, because I think the delay that this is going to have, I think, is going to be more expansive than a lot of these sports leagues are necessarily prepared for.
And Will, in a piece you recently wrote for the New York Times, you say, quote, "Sports provides a kind of framework for life, a way of marking time. Every year is a little bit different than the year before, but has essentially the same parameters." Can you talk a little bit more about what you meant there and how you've used sports events as a way to kind of mark time?
Yeah, I kind of joked in the piece that, like, if you say the word 2004, the first thing that comes to my mind is not a presidential election and what happened in my life. It's the Boston Red Sox. If you say 2000, basically it's only 2001 and 2011. That's only because my son was born and the Cardinals won the World Series that year, so it's close. Like, usually when you think of years, a lot of sports fans think mark it by what happened in that sports year. And I think there is a constant consistency to it. I think when you're going to see the kind of disruption that you've seen in the sports year, I kind of made the argument in the piece that, obviously I miss sports and we really miss sports right now. But I think one of the reasons sports was so slow to cancel is not just money. It was the idea that, like, you are losing something if you lose a year from the record books or from the memories. And there's a disconnect, and it almost becomes a, wait, can I, like, the idea that there would not be an NCAA tournament would have seemed believable in any other context. And now it's been like a week and a half. We've already kind of gotten used to it. And I wonder what more things we're going to get used to perhaps in the weeks to come.
You know, and people who aren't part of the sports world might not understand how big of an impact it can have on people, you know, emotionally and psychologically, or why it's such a big part of their lives. You know, for me, the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the start of the Major League Baseball season have always been a way to mark spring and something that, you know, you always look forward throughout the winter. Cheryl, I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about what sports have meant to you in your life.
Well, sports is what I did as a kid. I grew up with eight brothers and sisters, and sports was our only way to get out of the house and do something fun. So it was that. My grandfather lived with us, and he came from Poland, and he used to deliver coal to both Wrigley Field and Old Comiskey Park. And so he, when he retired, he lived with us, and he showed me how much you could love a game. This man didn't speak any English, and he came here, and he learned English by watching TV and by, you know, talking to people. And so that connection, I had that connection as a kid, and it was always part of my life, even though I was denied playing Little League because of Title IX wasn't available and being able to do sports in college because it wasn't available. But I still had that passion for sports. And I understand what, you know, the way the fans are probably feeling right now, because it's a loss. I think people are mourning a little bit about that, although the overall view of what's going on is much more detrimental than our love and the lack of sports. And yesterday I was talking to some Olympic gymnasts and wrestlers who can't go to the Olympics, and you could hear that they understood it, but it's painful for them because they've been working towards the Olympics for 4 years, and one, she's supposed to go into Yale. She's put 2 years off of going to Yale to be able to be in the Olympics. She doesn't know if she's going to be able to do that now. And another is a wrestler who's 33 years old. This was going to be his last Olympics, and he wants to get on with his life post, you know, sports. So it impacts you in so many ways, what's happening right now.
Yeah, and Will, something else you wrote about in that New York Times piece was the potential for the history of sports to be lost. And I'm curious if you can give us an example of what you meant there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think of baseball as my personal favorite sport, and I'm kind of going through what you're going through, Brian. The idea that, like, I know it's spring, but it doesn't feel like spring because there's no tournament and no baseball. To me, I always go back to 1994. You know, that was the year that the World Series was canceled because of a labor issue. Then it was a horrible thing, and to me, I was in college at the University of Illinois when that happened, and just the idea that there was no World Series felt like there was no Christmas, like there was no Thanksgiving, like something that had just been ripped away. But, you know, in a certain context, you know, if there was a year where we didn't have a Thanksgiving, eventually you would remember the year that there was no Thanksgiving, but it would evolve into all other years because you would have another Thanksgiving, because we don't keep historical records of our Thanksgivings. The idea that every single time from now on, when, you know, baseball is a sport that is obsessed with history and obsessed with consistency and constancy, when you look and realize, oh, 1994, there was just no World Series. And I think a lot of sports leagues are going to be dealing with that. The NCAA tournament's already dealing with that. The idea that, you know, I talk about as a Cardinals fan, you know, my grandfather watched Stan Musial and my father watched Bob Gibson and I watched Ozzie Smith and my son watches Paul Goldschmidt, and that kind of connection, that's a huge part of what baseball is the idea that it is always there. Sports are always there and they're always happening. When you cut that connection, I think it's a bigger deal than just, oh, I'm frustrated, I'd like to be watching sports right now. I feel like you're actually potentially fraying one of the things that really does connect fans and the games that they spend basically their entire lives being obsessed with.
And Cheryl, of course, sports are not just something that people play for fun. They're also a big business here in the U.S. And what kind of economic costs are we talking about here as the NBA, Major League Baseball, other seasons are suspended or maybe even canceled?
Yeah, we're talking about billions of dollars, billions and billions of dollars. A lot of the teams that were supposed to be still going on right now in the NBA and the NHL, they are still paying their day workers, so that's going on. And that's what we were listening to Rob Manfred yesterday on ESPN, and he was talking about they're trying to fit in as many games as they can when they can start. They're talking about having maybe 7 innings and double headers, and so because they're trying to get those games in, because they themselves are going to lose billions of dollars. And so we know the players are trying to figure out their service time and who can be a free agent, But I still think about the person, that the vendors, the ticket takers, you know, the gamblers are all going crazy right now too because they can't make any money. And so it's a tsunami, as I, you know, I use that term again, of people losing out financially. Everybody from the ticket taker to the owners to the players, it's impactful, and you can't make that up. These games, everything's going to be shortened, so there's no way that they could financially make that up unless you become creative. And we're hearing possibly, like, if the NBA can come back, maybe they won't finish the season, but maybe they'll have more teams in the playoffs, and that's one way you can make money. Same thing with the NHL. And baseball is talking about possibly going, get as many games in, and they would play the World Series in neutral sites well in to late fall, almost early winter.
Interesting. Cheryl Ray Stout, that is, covers everything Chicago sports for WBEZ. Will Leach is a national correspondent for MLB.com. Both of you, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
You're welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
And even if we're not able to play an organized sport right now or watch them on TV, that does not mean we can't still stay active during this time of isolation. Getting exercise is an important part of staying mentally and physically healthy. For more on what we should be doing and how much of it we should be doing, I want to welcome Christy Ashwanden. She's the author of Good to Go, What the Athlete and All of Us Can Learn from the Strange Science of Recovery. Christy, welcome to the 21st, and thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's start with this. How can exercise and staying active be good for our mental health and our physical health right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're living in this time of great anxiety. And I think one of the things that's really difficult right now is we have so much uncertainty. You know, it's one thing if we sort of know how things are going to play out, but it's like, you know, will there even be a baseball season? We don't know that at this point. And that's really hard to deal with. And so it turns out that exercise is one of the most powerful ways that we have to relieve stress like this. And it's a really healthy way of coping with stress. And getting outside to do some exercise can be really healthy as well. Now, I'm in Colorado. Our governor yesterday just declared a stay-at-home directive, and so we're not allowed to go out and go places. But it was interesting. He was very explicit in saying it is still okay to go outside and, you know, walk your dog, to be outside. The key is staying away from other people, you know, keeping that social distance from people. But I think particularly when we're all cooped up in our houses right now, getting outside, getting some fresh air, getting your heart rate up a little bit, moving your body can be really important both for physical health, but also for psychological health, emotional health. It's just a really good way to relieve stress. But there's also very good evidence now that moderate exercise is very good for your immune system. So it may also be a very important thing right now when we're all trying to stay healthy. It's an important part of that healthy lifestyle.
Sure, and a little bit more on that in our immune systems. Do you have some specific advice for the type and intensity of training we should be doing right now?
Yeah, the very best, you know, if your objective here is to stay healthy, you know, to help keep your body resilient in the face of this pandemic and all of that, then moderate up exercise, you want to probably keep it under 1 hour per day, but something like brisk walking, you know, strength training and things like that are very good. Those are things that you can do inside your house. You don't have to go outside. But anything that's moderate, what you don't want to do is exercise, you know, to your absolute limit right now, because the flip side of this is that very intense exercise can also be sort of an immune suppressant. And this is something like, let's say, running a marathon, or, you know, basically going at your close to your maximum for an hour or 90 minutes or more. That's when it really sort of goes from being good for your immune system to being, you know, depressing it for. And this decline in your immune system that happens after that intense exercise is fleeting. It's not something that lasts a long time. But right now we're in this pandemic. We're all trying to stay healthy. So it's probably not a great idea, you know, to start seeing how many hours at once you can run.
Sure. And what tips do you have for exercising safely outside? And what is better about outside than staying in right now?
Well, I think the benefit of being outside is just that fresh air, sunshine, if it happens to be sunny that day when you're going out. But also, like I said, you know, when we're cooped up inside, there's kind of this, you can start to feel a little bit stir crazy. And I think there's just, yeah, there is some scientific evidence that being in the outdoors and around nature can be good for our psychological and physical health. But if you're outside exercising, it's very important that you maintain these social distances. So if you are walking in a park or on a bike path or even in your neighborhood and you encounter another person, it's really important that you keep that distance between you. And 6 feet is, you know, the recommended distance. And it can be a little bit difficult because it's not just an arm's length. It's further than that. And I think one thing that's very hard to do is to sort of remember to do this. Particularly, I've had people ask, is it okay to go walking with a friend if we keep 6 feet apart? And the answer, I've run this by experts, their answer is yes, that's okay. But the trick here is that you really do have to maintain that 6 feet. And you know, it's really easy for us to fall back on old habits. You don't want to touch one another. You don't want to pass a water bottle between you. You really need to keep that distance. And that distance is further away than what would normally feel comfortable. And so it's really going to take some vigilance, you know, sort of psychologically to ensure that you're keeping that safe distance.
Sure. Of course, the month of March here in Illinois, and I'm sure where you are in Colorado as well, means some questionable weather. Any tips if we truly cannot get outside?
Yeah, if you can't get outside, you know, do some exercise inside. There are so many online programs now that you can find with exercise programs. There are even ones that you can do that are sort of with a live instructor, and you can do it with other friends if you're feeling really socially isolated and a bit lonely. But even something as simple as doing some push-ups, jogging in place a little bit, dancing, you know. Some friends and I recently had a little remote dance party where we all turned on the same music. We were on a video program. So there are a lot of other ways that you can do this. And I think the trick here is to get creative, but to find something that's enjoyable for you, but some way to get your body moving, because that's really going to be the thing that makes you feel better. Physically, it's helpful, but also I think psychologically to sort of not be sitting all the time.
That was WILL Managing Editor Brian Moline speaking with Christy Oshwanden. Christy is the author of Good to Go, What the Athlete and All of Us Can Learn from the Strange Science of Recovery. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.